Welcome to the Dravet Syndrome edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the DS community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're in Boston today speaking with Daniel Fisher, President and CEO of Tevard Biosciences, which is Dravet spelled backwards, a reflection of the company's desire to reverse Dravet syndrome. Tevard is developing technologies to modulate RNA function to treat rare and severe diseases that are usually not amenable to traditional gene therapy. Mr. Fisher is originally from Caracas, Venezuela, and emigrated to the United States in 2000. Thanks for speaking with us, Daniel.
It's a pleasure to be here, Larry. I'm happy to talk about Tevard and the great work that we're doing.
Wonderful. Let's start the story with your daughter and the daughter of your partner, Warren Lambert. How did you get into this and why?
So my daughter got diagnosed when she was about 8 months of age. She's 13 years right now. So at that time, through my wife, we started learning about the disease. At that time, there wasn't much that you can do about it. There wasn't much in terms of treatment. Of course, there wasn't even less in terms of cures like gene therapy. So by coincidence, I went to a conference which was organized by Warren, and that's where I met Warren for the first time. Then I met another father and a professor at Georgia Tech at the time living in Atlanta, and we started a first company where we repurposed drugs for Dravet, and actually one is being used today by patients. But eventually we wanted to really, Dravet, as you know, it's much more than only the seizures. Kids with Dravet have a very severe cognitive impairment, have balance issues and high rates of mortality. So we wanted to really try to develop a cure for Dravet that would target not only one of the symptoms, which are the seizures, but also the root cause of the disease.
In a nutshell, what is it like being a father of a child with Dravet and an executive trying to develop a cure for the disease that your child has?
So being a father and furthermore being part of the family of a child with a rare disease, in this case Dravet, is extremely tough. I think we take it for granted. We just move on and you deal with a situation and you live day by day, but you're dealing day in and day out with a child that you know that is medically fragile, who will have a seizure at any moment, and you never know what the outcome of the seizure could be. So you have to be 24/7 taking care of the child. In my case, then my job, of course, is finding cures for my kid and other kids with severe diseases as well. So at one time I was giving a talk and somebody asked me, how do you separate your professional and your personal life? And I thought for a moment and I said, actually, I don't. When I get home, every time my wife and my other kids ask me, Daddy, have you found a cure for Natasha? So at the end, what I'm doing is part of our life, and that gives us hope. So at the end, we hope that we are going to find the cure for my daughter as we do this and for other children as well. But the whole journey toward that goal is healing for everybody as well, everybody who's part of the family, and to everybody who knows what we're doing at the company.
Okay, this is very interesting. What led to the diagnosis of Natasha, and how frequently are her seizures, and how severe are they?
Yeah, so the diagnosis was a journey on its own. She had her first seizure when she was 6 months of age. At that time, we had no idea what was going on. It was in the middle of a night. So my wife called her dad, who's a pediatrician, and he asked us to take a video, and right away he said she's having a seizure. At that time, we thought it was just a febrile seizure. Next day, we took her to the neurologist, and to make the long story short, I think about 2 or 3 months later, she got diagnosed with Dravet syndrome. And the frequency and severity of seizures just evolves as the kids age. Originally, they were pretty rare. However, every time she had a seizure, she ended up in the ICU intubated. Then we went through different phases. We tried different medications. Right now, she's having 4 to 5 seizures every night. Right now they evolve, they're nocturnal. So every night she will have 4 to 5. There was a time maybe 3 to 4 years ago where she was having 30 to 40 seizures every night.
But not during the day?
No, right now they're not during the day. They seizures evolve, seizure times, and now they're mostly nocturnal.
And how do you explain that?
I don't have an explanation, but it's known that the types of seizures and the when they occur change as well. So there are different triggers. For some reason, when they are asleep, at the different stages of their sleep, that trigger seizures. In the past, there were different triggers. Body heat can be one. If she gets outside and it's very hot, that can be a trigger. Children with Dravet, when they have fever, that's a very well-known trigger. In Natasha's case, there was a time where visual patterns were a trigger. Not only flashing light, but also if I had a shirt like this one, which has squares, she would look at it and that could trigger a seizure. So there are many triggers and they evolve during the history of the disease.
I'd like to ask you, to the best of your knowledge, how rare is Dravet? I understand that it is quite rare in relation to general, ordinary epilepsy. This is a severe form of epilepsy, and it is considered a very rare disease.
Yeah, so I think the most current number, it's a 1 in 15,000 kids have Dravet. In the U.S., there are anywhere between 5,000 and 10,000 children with Dravet.
And there is a patient organization. Now, there's a Dravet Syndrome Alliance organization that deals with this and looks after patients.
Yeah, the Dravet community is extremely well organized. There's a very strong foundation, which is DSF, the mm-hmm. Dravet Syndrome Foundation, which provides patients with quite a bit of support and funds quite a bit of research.
And at the current time, there is no cure, but there are treatments available. You're looking to actually cure the disease by attacking the root cause of this situation, right?
Yeah, that is correct. We're trying to cure the disease. There are multiple treatments. And again, there's if you talk to families, caregivers of children with Dravet, they're generally not in one drug, but they're in multiple drugs. And you kind of change mm-hmm. them over time. In the last few years, there's been several drugs that have been approved. One, which you mentioned, which is Epidiolex. Another one, which is extremely effective, which is Fintepla. And probably there are another ones in clinical trials right now. And the goal of the several companies that are working on either oligos or gene therapy or tRNA therapy like we are, is to treat the root cause of the disease. Even if you don't cure it, at least we're looking at treating the disease holistically and not only trying to reduce seizures.
So as it was explained at the conference where I covered, you cannot actually put this gene into an AAV, to a vector, because it's simply too large. So you have to control this gene expression very delicately, right? Can you walk us through a little bit about the technology that you're using to develop this therapy?
Yes, of course, the Dravet SCN1A, the gene that causes Dravet, is about 160 KBs. The coding region is around 7 KBs, so you can't fit it on an AAV vector. So when we started, when we came up with the idea, why don't we do gene therapy, we knew that doing gene therapy for Dravet is not trivial, being the size of the gene one of the constraints. So our scientific co-founders, Harvey Lodish and also Professor Jeff Coller, who used to be at Case Western, he's currently at Johns Hopkins, came up with the idea of using tRNAs to modulate RNA function.
And can you explain for our audience, what is that?
Yeah, and let me start with one. We have two platforms based on tRNAs, and we have a third one, which we license from the Coller Lab as well, which is protein-based, not tRNA-based. But the tRNA-based, we have two very different ones. One, which we call the suppressor tRNA, we're targeting the mutated gene of the disease, in this case, the mutated gene of SCN1A.
Right.
And we can treat those cases where they have a nonsense mutation. So 25% of all cases with Dravet are caused by nonsense mutations.
Right.
And with a suppressor tRNA, we use a modified and engineered tRNA actually to allow the ribosome to read over that premature stop codon or nonsense mutation and produce a full-length dystrophin. Full-length SCN1A protein. So in Dravet, the patients that have an SCN1A mutation, the second copy of the gene is non-functional. So only you have the healthy copy producing 50% of protein. So our goal is to get that second copy, the mutated copy, to produce SCN1A protein and potentially get to 80% or 100% of total protein level. So again, this one is aimed toward the portion of the population that has a nonsense mutation, and we're trying to recover the function of that non-functional gene. Our second platform, which we call the Enhancer platform.
Enhancer.
We call the Enhancer. We use a combination of three different tRNAs to target that healthy copy of the gene, the one that's healthy and is producing 50% protein levels. We target that gene and get it to produce up to 100% of protein levels. And that way, its mechanism is that we target what are called non-optimal codons in the message, and we get them to become more optimal and then produce more protein from that healthy, good working copy of the gene. With that therapy, we could treat 100%, in theory, of the patients in the population.
What stage are you in right now? Is this a still preclinical trials?
It's still preclinical, yes.
So you're doing mouse models or?
So we're beyond mouse models right now. We're going to be getting into non-human primates pretty soon. And our most advanced one right now is the suppressor technology.
So what's the timetable for this? A lot of startups, engage in this kind of work, and some of them do make it to the finish line. With regard to Duchenne, obviously, we're keeping a close watch on what's going on with Sarepta. You did mention dystrophin, and I guess that's an allusion to the work that you hope to achieve with Duchenne. If we can speak a bit about that, I think that would also interest our readers.
Yeah, sure. In Duchenne, about 13 to 15% of all cases with Duchenne are caused by nonsense mutations. And probably the only way that you have to restoring full-length dystrophin is by using the suppressor technology. So in this case, we recently partnered with Vertex to develop not only the suppressor technology, but also a third technology that we have that we're going to be using in combination with the suppressor, which we call the amplifier, that also came from Johns Hopkins. And the idea is to try and treat the 13 to 15% of the population of Duchenne with nonsense mutation. And the goal is to produce that full-length dystrophin from a non-functional gene.
And for those who are listening and who may not know that Vertex has established its reputation on treating cystic fibrosis with at least three FDA-approved therapies and is now working on a fourth, the work that Vertex is doing with regard to Duchenne is of course, very interesting. When was that partnership signed? Is that a recent thing?
It's very recent. We signed it this year.
Okay. And last thing, what is your outlook for gene therapies in general for both Dravet and Duchenne at this point?
So I think there are multiple technologies, multiple approaches. Every day you read news of a new company coming out, a new technology coming out with a lab. So I think the future for gene therapy is bright these days. There's so much more understanding of not only what works and what doesn't work. There are new therapeutics, also new delivery methods coming out, which is critical for gene therapy. There's much more that we know about the safety of the gene therapies from the initial ones that were done many years ago. I remember when my daughter got diagnosed almost 9 years ago, when the doctor says, okay, she has Duchenne, she has Dravet syndrome. I said, okay, so let's cure her. And the doctor said, oh, sorry, there isn't any cure. I said, what do you mean? I've heard about gene therapies. Aren't there gene therapies? And they told me, oh, no, that's so far away. It's not, you can't even think about it.
And so, interesting that you do not come from a scientific background. You come from an engineering business management background.
Yes, I'm not a scientist. I think I approach this from being a father. So I had the drive and the passion. And the other one, probably as an engineer, I approach it as an engineering problem where we have a problem and we need to find a solution. And I just find the bright people that know the science and can do the science, and great partners like Warren, which we make an amazing team. We work together quite a bit, day in and day off. And then Harvey Lodish, who's a renowned scientist who actually wrote the book on molecular cell biology. So there's nobody better to drive the science with us.
Let's hope for Natasha and for all Dravet syndrome patients that you succeed in your endeavors. Thank you very much for talking with us, Daniel. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.